I'm Tina Andrew, and you are listening to Cultivating Indigenous Voices from KXEI Tucson. Today, I have a guest who is in town for a live performance, Conjunto icon Jaime De Anda. Just last month in September, I had the opportunity to be backstage with Jaime De Anda and other musicians to capture an interview with him in regards to his music career, his background, and the success that he has had over the years as a Conjunto Antijano musician.
Hi, this is Jaime De Anda. Just want to say hi to all my fans out here. And it's great to come back, you know, Tucson.
Well, let's rewind back a little bit, because I'm always curious to know where an individual comes from, where their cultural roots lie.
My dad, he played the bajo sexto. He was a mechanic during the week. He played the bajo sexto on weekends. And my mom used to always tell me, go with your dad, go with your dad. And it was only three instruments. It's a bass, it's a drummer, accordion player, and of course the bajo sexto, and he played the bajo sexto. And I'm there, you know, as any other kid, sitting there listening, hearing from 7 till 2 o'clock in the morning on the weekends. And that's a lot of music, you know, you're listening, you're hearing polkas, they're playing rancheras, they're playing cumbias, they play boleros. I didn't think about it, but, you know, you start, you know, following the rhythm, and every weekend I had to be at least 4.5, 5 years old. And my dad had a shop during the week, a mechanic shop. And listening to the radio, I had gotten 2 steel rods. And I started like playing drums in the office, hitting the phone, hitting the fan, breaking things. And I realized, so my mom told my dad, we need to get him some drums before he breaks everything in the office. So that was one way that I was able to get a drum set at a young age. And there were Ludwigs. And I would always be in the garage. I was playing every day, every night. You know, I'd be practicing, following the music and practicing. And one day, they had rehearsal at the house. And their drummer, she didn't make it to practice. And my dad said, well, si no vienes, if he doesn't come, that's fine. So my dad said, but ¿qué está mi hijo? And my dad's compadre, his name was Chema Sanchez. And he said, sí, de verdad, he plays. I said, yeah, let's test him. So they played a polka. And I started following the drums with him. And they tested me. Okay, how about a cumbia? Real simple, playing the cumbia. How about a bolero? Started playing this little bolero. He goes, wow, seems like your son plays better than our drummer. So, you know, following them, I didn't think they were playing around, but they said, he told my dad, I think we should hire him. He sounds really good. And I'm thinking, oh, they're kidding, right? And before you know it, the following weekend, I saw him packing up my drums. Well, hey, what are you doing from the garage? And they're like, no, you're going to go play this weekend with us. I am. I was like 6.5.
Oh, wow.
Almost 7. And the bars are ready here. And the weekends from 7 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Wow, 7 years old. Yeah. 6, 7 years old.
Yeah, and, you know, back then, I didn't realize it, but like every other kid, I was playing the drums on the weekends. Mm-hmm. I helped my dad once in a while at the shop, trying to go to school at the same time. But I learned a lot. Throughout the years, I started thinking, I thought I was a drummer at 7, at 8, like every other kid. Now I'm bored. I want to learn accordion. I told my dad, buy me an accordion. What? Show me. What? Show me you can play the accordion, and I'll let you know. So I went to my dad's compadre, Chema Sanchez. He didn't live too far from us. So every day I'd be over there practicing. I told him, teach me a polka. Which one? And I remember the name of it because it's from Antone de la Rosa. It's called a Totonilco polka. And he showed it to me. And I was learning it. And every day, I was practicing, played it. Every day, played it. So I would play it every day. And when the moment finally came, my dad sat there and says, okay. I said, Dad, I'm going to play the polka. Remember, if I played it right, the whole thing, I want an accordion. Well, let me hear. So I played it for him. And I was nervous, of course. But I played it when I was at the end of the polka. I said, okay, how's that? I want an accordion. No, hold on. What do you mean? Learn another one. What? You said one. I didn't say one. I said learn a polka first. I had to learn 4 or 5 to prove to him that I was serious. Thanks to Chema Sanchez, he told my dad. I think she can get it down. She can pick it up. She's picking it up pretty fast. So.
How old were you by then?
I was about eight and a half, nine. I was picking up. Yeah. And my nephew, Ruben Martinez de Anda, he lived close by. We were always hanging out with each other. He heard me. And his dad was a bass player. So he started learning about the bass. We all hung out together because I was into the music. Well, he would hang out with us a lot. And my dad was starting to teach David how to play the bajo, sexto. And before you know it, it's just us three in the room now. And I'd be on the accordion, and we're playing little by little, you know, playing. And before you know it, we had another cousin. We're looking for somebody else to play, right? Because Ruben said he was learning the bass. Ruben goes, I can play the drums. I'll learn the drums. If you find somebody to play the bass, we find another cousin named Raymond. He's on that 8-track picture. Right? An 8-track, a classic. Well, we started practicing at home. But the one thing we couldn't do was, when I came to singing, none of us sung. None of us spoke Spanish because they always spoke Spanish behind us, I guess. But my dad would say, yeah. So we had a different gentleman, time from time, that would help us. He'd be the singer. We were playing music. We were learning more and picking up more. And our name was, we made a family band. Our first name in 1977, it was called Las Estrellas de Houston. And we had for about maybe 2 years. So then we recorded La Musiquera on the 45, Besos Besitos, and then we recorded 1979 on the 45. I always announced it because Ramon Ayala recorded it, and he recorded in 2000, something around there. Well, I recorded in 1979. It's Un Puño de Tierra. The music is mine when it first came out.
Yeah.
And so for some people don't believe it. They said, no, it's Ramon. I said, no, it's my music.
Really?
No, it's not. It's his. I said, okay, go to YouTube, look it up, 1979, and listen to the music. You know, back then, we didn't get the exposure. But that gave us an opening door. We stayed a lot in Houston. We traveled to Corpus, started going to Laredo, you know, expanding from Houston. And so we got called. My dad said, okay, we're going to go to Agapito Sunia. He's from San Antonio. He had like a little garage. That was the studio. So that's where we recorded the 8-track. So while we're setting up, my dad's talking to Agapito in the office. They're looking through the glass, and they're watching us setting up. Well, they're talking and talking, and we're setting up. And we started recording, and then when we were through, my dad comes out. Said, how we do? Yeah, you know, dad would like to compliment. No, it sounds okay. It sounds okay. Well, I was 15 at the time, recording the 8-track. And then my dad goes, vamos a cambiar el nombre. Vamos a cambiar. What? We're going to change the name of the band. For what? Well, he said he was talking to Agapito in the office when they were watching us. And we were setting up, but the man asked, ¿y eso, ellos quién son? Well, my dad goes, oh, ellos son mis chamacos. I said, oh. So at the end, he says, that's why we're going to change the name to Los Chamacos de Raúl Yanda. And that's why I said, okay, well, we are kids.
Yeah.
So that's where the name started from. Okay. So 1979 or 80, the name got changed to Los Chamacos de Raúl Yanda. So it's me, David Yanda, Ruben Yanda, my nephew, Raymond Yanda, my cousin, and of course my dad would play once in a while. You know, back then there was hardly no one, young. We were the first and only conjunto that started something because by then we were playing at Matamoros Ballroom in Houston. That's a very famous ballroom where everybody started there. Rubén Naranjo, Nino Salivar, Los Rivertos, the Mafia, Roberto Perez, his compadres. Everybody played there. Tony De La Rosa, we got to play there too. And I loved playing there because when we did, we played with other bands. I was like a fan. I was right there in front, you know, just watching them play. And Uncle Flores, I'd watch him. Rubén Naranjo, I'd watch him play. If I wasn't watching him playing, then I'd be dancing with my sister and my cousins. I loved to dance a lot. Rancheras, cumbias, chotis, redobas. And I guess it kind of gave me the idea of doing more on stage with accordion. But at the time, it's funny because while we're playing and we're starting to do dancing and this and that, you could see some kids, you know, some would be laughing at us and like, you know, what are you guys doing? Because it would look silly, I guess. Because they never saw that for conjunto bands. And being young at the time, well, I was listening to everybody. So I listened to Steve Jordan. I would listen to Juan Villarreal and different styles of music. But the one thing that Mr. Tony De La Rosa said, he told me, you know, tocas muy bien, muy bien. He said, pero te falta. I said, what do you mean? Te falta tu propio estilo, because you need to find your own style. I said, well, how do you do that? He goes, I can't tell you. But if you keep going, you'll find it. If not, you'll hear it somewhere. I said, that night I could not sleep. I kept thinking, how can I get my own style of playing? Where? If you listen to the radio, you knew if it was Rubén Naranjo, You knew if it was Roberto Pulido. You could distinguish all the bands because everybody had their own style. Yeah. So then I would think, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to find my style. Well, we recorded so many songs, and I recorded a song, Pajaro Negro. From the 8-track, was the first album we did, The New Generation. And when I recorded it, years later, we were at a restaurant eating one time. And I recorded Pajaro Negro again on the live CD. And we're like, hey, you're playing Tejano music. We want the music in the restaurant, right? So we were in a booth or somewhere. And then Pajaro Negro, my song, came out. I'm like, oh, wow. And I heard somebody say, hey, listen, Dad, listen, Dad. Listen to that. That's Jaime de Anda. I went, who said that? Wow. I was looking. When he said that, he went, listen to him. This is how he plays accordion. I thought, does that mean I have my signature? Does that mean what? I found it? And that's what he meant. So now whatever I do or play, you know, they're signatures. You can tell who Tony and Anka. And when I used to think, I hope I get to see Tony again so I can thank him and saying how I understand. You know, how do you create your own style? Because you're following everybody else. Mm, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
But it was an honor and a pleasure to know that, not realizing we were going to make something of music, and we were going to make a career out of it or continue. Or now we started getting kids attention, playing a lot of quinceañeras. It helped a lot, because back then, like I said, we were the only conjunto playing. Mm-hmm. So I would listen very hard, my dad said. We started doing arrangements and doing different things with the music, conjunto. Let us experiment. Let's see if we get the young generation involved. My mom sometimes would tell him, yes, let him do it, because you're playing in a lot of quinceañeras. And that's it helps a lot, because, of course, a lot of kids are there. And now they're watching and starting to stand in front and listen to us. And we're still learning Spanish, don't get me wrong, even today. But it was hard, because I was learning now how to play the accordion. I didn't sing at the time, but I started moving a little bit. And then I started learning how to sing a song or two. But as I was singing a song, I was trying to play the accordion at the same time. And it's like, it's coordination. You need a lot of practice. Because I would see Donia Rosa do it. Anke Flores do it. I said, how do they do that?
Singing and playing?
And playing.
Oh, okay.
I said, I got to do that. So I practiced every day, every day, every day, every day. And then I wanted to add dancing. So I said, oh, even more difficult, right?
Yeah.
So when we started dancing, and doing arrangements, and some of the arrangements you probably didn't recognize them, they sound like some rock bands. And I wasn't really into rock music a lot, because I was listening to a lot of Tropical, Tex-Mex, Conjunto, and thinking, well, we had an intro, how are we gonna put that with the song, and how are we gonna do all these things? Let's just, you know what, let's just go by ear, let's just see what happens, huh? So we started messing around, just doing a lot of stuff. But I knew my dad would come back. Hey, good time, Senza, what are you doing? Which, it's true, you don't want to lose the music, the foundation of the music. And back then, people were not used to that. They liked to dance, and that's what they want. So when we did all this other stuff, people would, at the beginning, they were like, hey, what are you doing? We can't follow that. We can't dance to this. So it kind of discourages at the moment to think, should we keep doing this? Or do we stop? And if we stop, we're going to get bored, I think, because we want to add more to conjunto. And we said, well, we're just going to give it a try. And then as you're traveling to different cities, it's different. People dance different. Mm-hmm. Different styles of dancing. To get the people to understand what we were doing, we started playing concerts, because in concerts, people don't dance. You know, they stand up more. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, pretty much got them to like and listen and watch. Anytime we would play somewhere, they'd want to go because, why? It wasn't boring.
Yeah.
You make it exciting. We dance, pick up the chord and do things with it. And I think that really helped us realize that we were starting something with the new generation. That's why the first album was called The New Generation. We did. And I think it helped a lot knowing that today, I'm very honored that almost every accordion player, every band, even from El Tocable, from Palominos, from Los Desperados, every one of them, they used to go to our shows and practice and sound check. They were young. I haven't seen them at our shows. And they would tell me, God, you know, thanks to you, Jaime, we got our own band. We created our own. We're doing our thing now. So little by little, new generations of accordion players and bajo sexto players were coming out. I was like, wow, that's cool. And it's crazy that now I hear that. You know, they tell me, you know, thanks to you, that when you started back in the 70s, and that you kept going with it because it got us to want to start playing our own music, to want to learn the accordion, learn the bajo sexto and drummers. And it's amazing today how many young musicians are out there, talented. And today's music, well, now everybody has the freedom to play and do all these creations. And I'm thinking, man, back then it wasn't that easy, you know. But that's pretty much what makes me glad that I stuck to my guns. I stuck to conjunto. I stuck with accordion. Even today, I try to keep it real. We have our arrangements. But to make the people happy, that's the hardest thing. And all I do is I want my fans to enjoy the show when I come out and to remember and to say, when I went to see Jaime Vianda, we had a great time and great music. That's what I'm about.
Thank you so much. What is one, I guess, a piece of advice for any musician that is just starting?
Well, for sure, you know, if you're young and in school, finish your school, finish your, you know, get your diploma, get your degree. Today's technology is always advancing. And even though back then I would hear, you can be book smart or you can be street smart, but still, you have to stick with it. You have to think dedicated. If you're going to try to be a musician, there's so much to learn about music, understand music. Because I learned by ear. I didn't learn by notes. And I admire a lot of people that write their own song, their own notes. My dad would tell me, because he didn't learn about notes, but he said, "Dad, well, that looks pretty cool to learn notes like that." He goes, "Look, Mijo," this is back then, "let me tell you something. If you learn that song by notes, okay, you can play it. If I take that book away, play it, why can't you memorize it? Yeah. Why can't you hear it? Why can't you hear the tones, the notes, everything else?" Because he goes, "In a lot of places we play it, it's always dark." You see? So, you know, I wish everyone well. I do. Everyone out there that wants to be dedicated, that wants to start a band, it's not easy. Not easy to find everyone on the same page, to sacrifice, to be dedicated, to have time, to be devoted, and to get along. Because sometimes you eat, sometimes you don't, but it's the sacrifices that hopefully that makes you feel it was all worth it. Because today, you can be a star, and tomorrow, you can be a falling star. That's the hard part. And that's what's scary. Because, and another main thing which is really true, no matter how big you get or where you go or how far you climb, never think you're the best or never think you're better than anyone else. My dad would always tell me, remember, there's always somebody better than you, always. What you want to do is stay humble, try to, you know, understand that today everybody's welcome to start the band. Everybody has a chance to be somebody. But when you get to that position, don't forget where you came from. Don't forget who you are. Sometimes I understand that, you know, we have a schedule. You don't get to say hi or bye to fans, and you take off, and I try to make an effort. Even if I'm eating sometimes, and a fan comes by and wants an autograph, I'm excited to know that they want an autograph. The day will come where it'll be all over. That's why sometimes, I remember a long time ago, I had asked someone for an autograph a while back. And the person wasn't eating or nothing, but I remember asking him, and the look he gave me was like, who did I make it out to? I felt like, wow, you know? So I get the feeling of both sides, being a fan, being an artist, and to understand when or be respectful when to ask for an autograph, or you might get lucky, or you might not. But we're all the same, no matter how big, who you are, what you make. The talent of God is a gift. No matter what you do, it's how you take care of it and how you treat others that makes you successful to me.
I appreciate you taking the time to do the interview with me and just the things that you have shared and a part of your story and for being here in town in South Tucson to share your talents along with so many amazing musicians.
You know, throughout the years, I've been on my own. I've, like I said, met many musicians. Well, I'm very honored and happy to know that one of them is from Tucson. This is Stevie Ray Babbage's. I met him when he was 13, but talented. I mean, can play. You can tell he has the love for music. He's always playing. I mean, he's learned so much where today I can't believe it. The team that I have today, I can't believe it's amazing because he's talented. Then I got John Ramirez, he's from Houston. He was a fan when he was 5, 6 years old. And he knows, that's why he knows the songs and his, you know, we sing together pretty easy because he's always followed my music so long. And right now I have one of the top drummers to me that's carrying our drive. His name is Joey Jimenez, and he's from Seguin. Wow. He's got his followers. He's, mm-hmm. he's got his. He's been known for his talent, playing with different bands so many times. So many different bands. Unfortunate, and that's why I'm honored today that he's jumped on our team. And I feel that the band I have today is amazing to be known as Jaime de Anda, JDA, for the fans out there to enjoy. Because we're playing everything. Mm-hmm. We go back to the old school. Mm-hmm. We go back to new school. We try to do something new. And people are still asking for the old. Because you hear, oh, they still play the same song. This and that. But it's funny. If I don't play Yolanda, Barra Negra, or somebody will say, hey, what happened? Like, how come you didn't play them? I'm thinking, God, I'm tired. You know how many times I've played it myself? Sometimes I get tired of hearing them, you know? But we spice them up now, give it a little more flavor. Mm-hmm. We added more to it, and it makes it exciting. And it's hard because fans are getting mad. No, you don't sound the same. And you know, it's not, you know, I'm used to seeing this. Well, I understand, because when we see comedy shows or any show, and you think, oh, they done split up the actors and actresses. It's different now. It's not the same. Well, things change in life. And whatever happens, you have to be happy. So whatever you're doing, if you're happy, don't worry about the rest. Because if you do, then you're not going to still be happy. And which is hard because you got the good fans, you got the haters, you got all kinds, you know, yeah. You're like in sports. My wife, which is Darlene, which is also the manager, she doesn't let me read a lot of comments and negative stuff. And they say because maybe sometimes, yes, a little negative pushes you harder to do good. And then sometimes the negative knocks you down or makes you feel weak. Since I've been, I was hospitalized 2 years ago. I was infected by sepsis, which is an infection in your blood. And from there, I got carbon monoxide in my system. So to make a comeback, and the doctor says, hey, you're very fortunate to be alive and to keep going. And one doctor says, you might never be able to sing again because it changes your voice, changes how you talk. And I thought, wow. Another doctor says, you do what you feel. You do until the man upstairs tells you. And don't worry about it. Well, it's hard because you got fans saying, oh, you don't sound the same. You can't sing the same. You know, I guess they don't realize we're all still human. And I've been fortunate enough to go into church a lot to understand more now. And it's always when you get older, we start getting a little bit closer to Jesus and realize, oh, why didn't I find this book a long time ago? And it's always been there, but we never paid attention or wanted to read. And when you start reading and looking at the world, you're like, wow, it sure is different. You know, this world is almost upside down right now. And of course, what do? We look for God when things are bad. We need to thank God every day, no matter what we're going through. And that's what I've learned a lot, and to be a better person. Mm-hmm. Love your enemy. Be nice to everyone. So I've learned a lot. So thanks to my fans, family, friends, people like yourself, KXCI, thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk to the fans and give them an update of Jaime de Anda, JDA today.
Yes, thank you so much. But last question. I had some time to listen to your whole album, and it's amazing. But one that it just made put a smile on my face, and I had to listen to it twice on my way here, is Buddy's Polka. What is the story behind that song with the dog barking?
Well, you see, he's Buddy too. I had a Buddy's one, and he was a mascot of the band. And how he came out was we were playing in the Valley at the 4th of July Festival, and we were playing, and he was in the vehicle. And one of the roadies went back to the vehicle to get something, and he opened the door. When he did, well, Buddy won, he jumped out of the vehicle. We're at a concert, so he jumped out and ran. And the guy, the roadie didn't know, do I get what I'm supposed to get, or do I chase Buddy? What do I do? Well, Buddy took off, and he ran. We're playing. So he heard, I guess. So he ran up on stage, and he started barking, and we're like, what? We didn't know whether to stop playing or, you know, but nobody stopped because he ran up, he started barking and barking and barking at the crowd. And everybody was like, wow, I'm getting crazy. And then he sat down. And we're like, okay. So I had to think when we finished the song, what do I say? Somebody better not call animal control because he's out of control. But I said, well, I think we have a new member. And little by little, when the show was over, he was up there. He stayed up there like security. If people would touch the stage, he would go bark at him, and he'd stop. It's like, wait a minute. He is. So when we finished and we were taking pictures, well, fans, and they were in line. Hey, where's Buddy? We want to take a picture with Buddy too. And we were like, well, this is cool. But after a while, he was taking over. But he became the mascot of the band. So I made up a Porcas one, Buddy's one, mm-hmm. and a Buddy's two throughout the years. And that's why he gets on the album, he's barking, he does this and that, and believe me, Buddy two that I have now, he's smart, but the first one was amazing what he would do on his own. And fans still remember, they'll tell me, and Buddy, you have another Buddy, did you have any kids, any puppies? I said, wait. That's why we had a contract and I take them to all the clubs. But then we went to a club one time. Honestly, I remember this story. Went to a club because he was at a concert. It's a big stage, different. We're at a club now. And he went up there. We're trying to train him. If anybody calls him, he's not supposed to take and leave. Well, we took a chance. He was on the quoting box. We're playing. And somebody went, hey, bye, buddy. He got off the stage. He took off. And we're like, I'm like, buddy, get over here. Get over here, buddy. Where you at? Well, they found him. And what did they tell me? Hey, he's over here at the bar. What? Oh, okay, well, buddy's bringing me a drink. I have to take a something. Get your butt over here. But that's one story. And he became famous. He became so famous that we started having pyro on stage, pyro. Well, buddy, I don't know why, and one of the shows in Corpus, it was a stage almost like that, real big. Well, we had pyro. Well, Buddy was on stage, and for some reason, he was close to the pyro, and he went at it, and he caught on fire. Yeah. Oh, he caught on fire, and we're like, what the heck? So he ran off the stage, and he ran all the way down the hall. So some security guard grabbed him and had him. So when we finished, we stopped the song. He brought him. He was all burnt here. So that night, we took him to a 24-hour hospital, bed hospital. When we got there, the doctor took him to the back and started, checking he was okay. This and that. I remember now because it was late. The son of the doctor comes out. He says, this y'all dog? I says, well, yeah. Well, what are you guys trying to do, barbecue him or what? I said, what the heck? That's what he told us. Said, no, it was an accident. Are you sure? Said, yes. I know he's a dog, he's not a hot dog, but yeah. But it was kind of scary. After that, we took him to Monterrey. He was so famous, on his birthday, they had an outdoor place where he had a birthday party. And dogs were invited because they had food for dogs. They had dog food. Because he came out on the video called Me Gustas Toda Toda. He's on the video.
Oh, okay.
He's on the video, Me Gustas Toda Toda. His first video. And he started getting popular and popular. And I'm serious. So when he got burnt and got sick, well, he was getting get well cards. We hope to see you soon. We miss you on stage. And we're like, golly. And now back then, wasn't no social media. So we get a lot of letters.
Yeah.
And he was taking over. But she brought younger kids also back into watching Conjunto. So it was a smart thing to do. And he was a mascot. And you'll see him on Como Te Llamas Paloma, the CD cover. He's on there.
Okay.
He's on quite a few CDs.
Okay.
And I guess I was doing a lot of polkas, so he told me, make a Buddy's Polka 1 and Buddy's Polka 2. So we brought it back on this album.
Okay.
So now you hear him.
Well, thank you for bringing that back, because that was just like, again, it just puts a smile on my face.
It's fun. But thank you, my fans out there, your support. And don't forget, we're working on another studio production. So we're thinking either studio or live 3. So it's up in the air.
You are listening to Cultivating Indigenous Voices from KXEI Tucson, featuring lifelong Conjunto Tejano musician Jaime de Anda. To hear other episodes, go to kxei.org.